Today's daf is Ksubis daf Ayin. We are going to finish up the sixth parak and begin the seventh parak of Masechet Ksubis. Today we're going to begin with the story about Ilfa. Ilfa was the one who was chavrusas with Rabbi Yochanan, and Ilfa is going to make a comment about connecting a brisa to a mishnah that relates to our mishnah about the concept that if a man before he dies has designated a shlish to do something with his money on behalf of his daughter, that Rabbi Meir Shita was that mitzvah lekayim divrei ameis, no matter what the girl says after the father passes away, the shlish has to do exactly as he was told to do. So we're going to discuss that concept, a little bit of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis. Now we're going to talk about it a little bit at the end of the parak, the idea of what children are able to accomplish in terms of kinyanim, pu'utos, mechan mekach, memkar and memkar. Are they able to do mekach and memkar and to give matanos and things of that nature? Then the next parak, the seventh parak, is parak hamadir. Parak hamadir, where they say ksuvus is a shas katan, has a little bit of every mesecht in it. So parak hamadir is meseches nedarim within meseches ksuvus, and it's going to talk about if a husband takes or is mekay, either makes a neder or is mekayim a neder that makes his wife's life extremely difficult. So at what point he has to divorce her, and does it make a difference if the man is a Yisrael or if the man is a Kohen, there's more finality to it if he's a Kohen, because he's never going to be able to remarry her, whereas if it's a Yisrael, he would be able to remarry her. And the Gemara is going to raise the question, what does it mean that the husband takes a neder against his wife that she's not allowed to have mizonos? That's something that he's obligated to do. He has to give her mizonos. How could such a neder ever be chal? The Gemara is going to have four different approaches to answering that question. And one of the ideas that the Mishnah is going to suggest is while the neder is still intact, the Mishnah says he should put a parnes in charge, have someone who supports her, have a third party supporter. So the last discussion in the Gemara is going to be, how does he do that? Isn't that the same thing as him supporting her? Because whoever the parnes is, doesn't that just become the shaliach of the Baal? And isn't that therefore a violation of the neder? So if you're going to take the neder seriously, how can you then have a parnes? How can you then apply a third party to support her? So let's begin at the two dots, about six lines before the end of the page. Samach tesam beis. Ilfa tala nafshe be iskaria de makusa. Ilfa hung himself up on the top of a mast of a sailboat. Amar, and he said, Ika dasi domini milsa de beir vichia of raboshi of lo pashit nalei mimas nisan nafilna me iskaria vitavana. He said, if anyone could come and bring me any sort of braisa that they heard, any authoritative braisa of rabichia and raboshia, and I can't show you where that braisa is based in the Mishnah, I'll jump from the top over here, I'll plunge to my death if I'm unable to demonstrate where every single braisa is based in a Mishnah. That was Ilfa's challenge. Now the rest of, why would Ilfa say such a thing? It sounds ridiculous. So the rest of the story is a story of Maseches Tainus, Daf Chaf Aleph, that Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were chavrusas. They were learning Torah together, but they didn't have enough parnasa. They were starving. So they decided, you know what? Efes ki lo yeh b'cha evyon, you're not supposed to be poor. We should go out. We should try to earn a living. And as they were going out to earn a living, Rabbi Yochanan heard Malachi Ashares that were discussing with each other whether to kill these people, to kill Ilfa Rabbi Yochanan or not, because they're leaving Chayei Olam and they're going to be Osek B'Chayei Sha'a. So Rabbi Yochanan said and one of the Malachim said, no, we shouldn't kill them because one of them is Aslis Gadal and it's not his time to die. So Rabbi Yochanan understood that Ilfa didn't hear what was going on, because Rabbi Yochanan said to Ilfa, did you hear that? Ilfa said, hear what? So Ilfa didn't hear what was going on. So Rabbi Yochanan took that as a sign that he should head back to Yeshiva and he should fulfill the pasuk, ki lo yechdal evyon mikeref haaretz. So Rabbi Yochanan went back to Yeshiva and he determined to be an evyon, but to at least learn Torah. And when he went back, they appointed him Rosh Yeshiva. And Ilfa went to business and probably had some success in business. And when Ilfa came back from his business ventures, everyone said, ah, Ilfa, it's too bad. You were every bit as good as Rabbi Yochanan. You were every bit as strong as Rabbi Yochanan in learning. You could have been the Rosh Yeshiva, but now you went out into business, and now you're not going to be as successful in learning as you otherwise could have been. And Ilfa said, not as successful? Are you kidding? I know just as much. I didn't lose a little bit of my learning. And I'll prove it to you. And he issued this challenge. He climbed up to the very high place, and he said, if someone can tell me anything that appears in a braisa that I won't be able to show you where it's based in the Mishnah, I'll jump. So the Achronim are bothered by the Maisa, that how could he risk his own life? It's also to be Ma'avir Atzmo L'das. So the Binayahu and the Ben Yoyada say that Ilfa knew how to swim. It was just dramatics. He was on top of his sailboat. He was going to take a big dive, and then he would swim to shore, and he would be okay. But it was just dramatics that he was showing. But still, if everyone else thought that he was going to die, how did anyone challenge him? Asa hu saba, the Gemara's next line is that someone came and they challenged him. So there is a Tosos in Maseches Chulin where Tosos writes that anytime it says hu saba in the Gemara, it's always Elio Anavi. So it could be Elio Anavi knew exactly what was going on, and he was trying to demonstrate that Ilfataka did know. He did know exactly how to answer everything from a Mishnah. So Asa hu saba, this hu saba came. Hu saba potentially Elio Anavi. And Tanilai, some of the Achronim ask if they had Gilui Elio all the time, why didn't they just ask him all the tekus that they have? So Gilui Elio, they're madregas, the way the Achronim, I think Rav Palam has a tshuva about it, about what Gilui Elio means. And he says, they're madregas of Gilui Elio. It doesn't mean that you get to ask him whatever you want when there's a Gilui Elio. Sometimes he's there to tell you something. So this Hahu Saba came, potentially Elio and Navi. Tanilai, Homer, Tnu Shekel Ibni, Bishavis, Vruyan Liten Lahem Sela, Nosn Lahem Sela. If a person says, I want you to give a shekel to my son for each week, and really he needs more than a shekel to live, he needs a sela to live, so you should give a sela to the son. But if the father says, I want you to be careful for my estate, only give him a shekel, no more than a shekel, then then you only give a shekel, even if he needs more than that to live. But if he specifies that not only do I want this money to go to my child, but after that I want the rest of the Yerusha to go to somebody else, and he says where the Yerusha is supposed to go, so then whether he says it in a lashon of don't give him more than a shekel, or whether he just says give him a shekel, you're not allowed to give him any more, because he clearly has in mind that he wants money to go elsewhere, not just to the child. Amrle, so Hamani, so they said, so they challenged Ilfa. So they challenged Ilfa about this price. So Amrle, Ilfa said, you want to know where it's based in the Mishnah? Hamani, Rabbi Meir, it's based in our Mishnah about Hamasha Shmos Labito, where a guy designates money by a third party to buy a piece of property for his daughter, and the girl says, Na'amena Salai Bali, I want you to give it to my husband instead. I totally trust my husband. You don't have to do what my father said. So Rabbi Meir said, you do have to do what the father said. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes. That wasn't the lashon in our Mishnah of mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, but that's the concept that Rav Meir said. Rav Meir said, Yasa shlish mashlush shlash biyado. The shlish has to do what the father had asked him to do. And the reason is, Rav Meir, it's assuming like Rav Meir da Amar, because Rav Meir holds mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes. That concept of in that terminology comes up in Maseches Gittin, that mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes. So when a person is dying and he says that you should do something, so then you have to listen to his dying wishes. That's the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes. Now, if you look in Tosos, Tosos points out, first of all, mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, afilu bibari kayim elan hachi, that unlike a shchiv meira, where divrei shchiv meira k'ksuv nukum mesurin dami, that if someone is dying and he's deathly ill, and he says something, he doesn't actually have to do a formal act of kinyan, that's dafka by a shchiv meira. But mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes goes beyond that. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes says that even if the person is healthy when he says it, still, mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, after he dies, we have to do exactly what he had asked us to do, what he had set up that we should do. The real question, Tulsa says, is Yesh Makshin, a couple lines later, Kivin the Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Emes, once you have Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Emes, Im Kein Maya Hani Had Divrei Shchiv Merak Yiksuv Nekum Surin Damu. Why do we need the concept of Divrei Shchiv Merak Yiksuv Nekum Surin Damu? Meaning, if you even have to listen to someone when they were healthy, who spoke when they were healthy, and then died, then for sure, when there is Shchiv Merah, the same halacha would apply. Why do we have to have an additional concept that divrei shchiv meira are kiksuv l'kumsurin dami, that it's as if the kinyan was made and it's absolutely binding? So Tosis gives two terutzim over here. He discusses this elsewhere in Shas as well. Tosis over here says v'amar rabbeinu tam d'lam rinu mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis aluka shuhushash mitchil l'kach. He says mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis is only when a third party was put in charge of taking care of this transaction. But when there was no specific third party that was entrusted with this task, it was just the guy saying what he wants done with his money, then we don't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei emes, but we would say divrei shchiv mera kiksuv nukumsurin dami. It's as if a kinyan was made and the divrei shchiv mera are binding. Inami dafka b'meis nosin b'chayim mekabel aval divrei shchiv mera b'cholin nukumsurin dami. The other difference is mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis is only if the person that he's trying to give to outlasts the giver. But divrei shchiv mera kiksuv nukumsurin dami would apply even if the person he's giving to also dies and predeceases him, dies before him, because divrei shchiv mera kiksuv nukumsurin dami means it's already a kinyan, it's already nicknames to the other party. So that's those are Tosfos' two answers. The Rishonim give other answers as well. They suggest mitzvah l'kayim, Tosfos says elsewhere, Masechet Babasra, that mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis, we say dafka when he says tenu. But if he doesn't say tenu, then there's no mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis. You have to use a specific formula, a specific lashon, to say dafka to give it. But by shchiv mera, even if he doesn't say tenu, it's a mitzvah l'kayim dvar of a shchiv mera. Beis Yosef in Choshen Mishpah quotes in the name of the Ritva that mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis is dafka for the person who heard it from the mace. But if he mitzav it to the yorshim and they're not in front of him, then there's no mitzvah l'kayim. So that would answer Tosfos' kasha, the difference between divrei shchiv mera. Divrei shchiv mera applies even to people who didn't hear it directly. We would still say it's kiksuv l'kum surin dami. There is a discussion, though, in the Rishonim about what exactly is the gedar of mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis. The word mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis sounds like it's a mitzvah. It's the right thing to do is to be mekayim. The mace said, this is what he wants done, so you're supposed to do that. That's a pray, pay the proper respect. If that's what it means, then the chared, it's not only about dinei mamonis. It should be about anything. The mace has a dying request, so you should fulfill that dying request. If father on his deathbed says, I want you to daven nusach svard, because I don't like that you daven nusach asher, something like that, so that's a dying request. So mitzvah l'kayim, divrei mace. But it's not so clear that's what it means. That's what the Lashon sounds like. It could very well be the mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis is a lashon of a kinyan, it means a kinyan, that it's a monetary transaction, as if the money already belongs to the other party. In fact, the Rav Elchanan Bab Basra points out that from the fact that Tosfos asks the kasha, what's the difference between mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis versus divrei shchiv mera kiksuv nukumsurin dami? Well, divrei shchiv mera kiksuv nukumsurin dami is a kinyan. It's a din dinei mamonis that you're makna the money to the other party. So if that's the case, that it's a din in a kinyan, so then it should have nothing to do with anything but dinei mamonis. So that's Rav Elchanan's raya that Tosfos must hold that it's purely a din in kinyan. The Mordechai holds otherwise. The Mordechai in Masechet Bava Basra, Rav Asher Weiss has a whole piece on this in Minchas Asra and Chumash, a whole piece on Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis. So this is the major chakira, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis. Is it a din in kinyan or a din in a mitzvah? So it seems from many Rishonim that it's a din in a kinyan, and many of the Achronim seem to hold that way as well. As once asked a Shaila, a guy doesn't like to wear a hat, and his mother said to him before she died, I want you to wear a hat. I want you to always wear a hat. So he wanted to know if he's obligated to listen to such a thing that he should always wear a hat. So one of the issues is kibud aveim. It's a fascinating issue. Kibud aveim is one issue, but mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis is another issue. And I thought in terms of mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis, there's nothing that's required about it, because mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis, I think we generally paskin, is only din and din imamins. So anyway, amar av chisab marukva hilchasa bein shamar tenu bein shamar al titnu noslem kol tzarcham. Whether the father said give a shekel, or whether he said don't give more than a shekel, give as much as the kid needs. What do you mean give as much as the kid needs? That's not what the father said. The father said don't give more than a shekel. Don't we pass the mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis? That's by other matters. When it comes to supporting his children, he wants his children to be able to live properly. The reason he said, don't give him more than a shekel, is he's trying to motivate his child to go earn a living, to go get a job. But in the meantime, if the kid is unable to support himself, he certainly wants the kid to be supported. Tzlan Hasam, we learned in the Mishnah, Pu'utos, young children, Mekchan Mekach, not young children, older children. Children are below Bar Mitzvah, but a little bit older. Mekchan Mekach, Umemkran Mecher B'metaltalim. They have the ability to buy and sell things, as long as it's metaltalim, as long as it's not karka. They have the ability to buy and sell. Amar Rav from Loshanu El She'in Shem Apotropos. That's only if there's no apotropos that's in charge of the estate. Avli Yeshem Apotropos, Ein Mekchan Mekach, Vein Memkran Mecher. Mecher. But if they have an apotropos in charge of the estate, so the children aren't supposed to be the ones making the kinyanim. It's the apotropos that's the one that's supposed to be making the kinyanim, and therefore the children are not authorized to do so. How do we know that? From the fact that the Mishnah says ein ma'aseh ketana klum, because there was a shlish that was in charge, so mele, there's nothing that the child is allowed to do. If you look at Tosos, av liyeshem apotropos ein mechan mekach, Tosos says, yeah, pirushach dafka mecher, aval matanosan matana, even when there is an apotropos and they no longer have the ability to buy and sell, but they still have the ability to give matana, delinin matana in svar l'chalik, ben yeshem apotropos lein sham. When it comes to matana, there's not going to be a difference between whether there's an apotropos or no apotropos. This happens to be a machlokas rishonim. Tosas quotes the sheet of Rabbeinu Chananel, but there are many other Rishonim that disagree with Rabbeinu Chananel. The Rav Yaak quotes from his Rebbeim, quoting the Mordechai, and the Rambam holds in Hilchas Mechira Perachav Tes Halacha Zayin, and many other Rishonim hold that dafka if there's no apotropos they can give him matana, but dafka if there's no apotropos they give him matana, when there is an apotropos they're not even allowed to give him matana. And the Tosfos Rid brings a raya that if to that shita, that if there's an apotropos they're not even allowed to give him matana, from the fact that Rafram proves the din of an apotropos of ein mechan mekach from our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, what was the woman trying to do? She was trying to give him matana. She was trying to say, give it to my husband as a matana. So we see that the whole discussion of the apotropos relates even to matters of matana. So it says Gemara, v'dilma hechadika shlish shayni. Maybe you can't bring any raya from our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah, it wasn't stam that there was an apotropos. There was a shlish. There was someone, there was a third party that was designated to do specifically this act. Im kein lisni avol b'katana yasa shlish ma'shlish l'shbiyado. If that were the case, that's when the katana is not able to do something. Only when there's a shlish, then the lashon of the Mishnah should have been that when there's a shlish, the katana should not have a say, and the shlish should do what he's supposed to do. My ein maisa katana klum. Why do we instead put the emphasis on the child and say ein maisa katana klum, that the girl has no right to do anything? Shmaimna afil bialma. That must be telling me a more general rule that ein maisa katana klum, that it's not only when there's a shlish, it's whenever there's any sort of apotropos, ein maisa katana klum, that a katana loses the ability, even if she's magia legila pu'utos, she's at the age of pu'utos where normally she'd be able to affect transactions, she loses that ability to make transactions. How old is the gila pu'utos? How old does it mean to be pu'utos? This is a discussion in the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Tes. Rabbi Yehuda says ben sheish v'sheva. Rav Kahana says ben sheva shmona. So, and the Bryce over there says ben teisha eser. So somewhere between the age of 6 and 10. And the Gemara over there says that all these different opinions actually all agree with each other. It really depends. L'ficha rifuso v'avanaso. It depends on the child. There are some kids that are more astute and, in 4th grade, they're already, 2nd grade, they're already taking advantage of all their friends and selling random things and making money and running businesses in 2nd grade. And there are other kids that are giving money to those kids and they have no idea about Mekach HaMemker. So it all depends on the charifus of the child. The Rishonim point out, though, that even though it all depends, the Meiri and the Mukayosik point out that no matter how charif the child is, less than 6 years old, for sure the sale is not valid. What about if you have a child who's a little bit slower and he's more than 10 years old? So that's Machlokes Rishonim also. The Torah quotes from his father, from the Rush, that Chazal was still Masakin, that his Mecher should be binding, even though he's not so charif and he's not so sharp once he's past the age of 10, whereas the Ramah says that a Stam Pot that reached that age, you could assume that he's that charif, but if you test him and you see that he doesn't really get it, so then it's certain, then we would not be Masakin, that he has the ability to buy and sell things. Okay, that's a little bit about Gila Putos. Hadron Lach Matsyasi Isha. Let us begin the 7th parak of Maseches Ksuvos, the Nedarim section of Maseches Ksuvos. Hamadir Sishto Milihanaslo. A guy takes a Nedar that his wife is not allowed to get any Hana'a from him. So Ad Lamid Yamid Parnis. For the first 30 days, after that neder, he can set up a third party to support his wife. She's not allowed to get enough from him, so he can't support her. You don't have to get divorced right away. Set up a third party to support her. Yes, Mikain, if the neder lasts more than 30 days and he still hasn't found a way out of that neder, then Yotzi v'yitim ksuba. Then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says it depends who he is. Be Yisrael chodesh echad yekayim mishnayim yotzi v'yitim ksuba. If he's a Yisrael, where even after he divorces her, there's always the possibility of remarrying her, so he stays with her for 1 month with the third party supporting her, and then by 2 months already he has to divorce her and give her ksuba. But be kohen shnayim mikayim mishlosha yotzi v'yitim ksuba. But if it's a Kohen, if the man is a Kohen, before we make any final arrangements of divorce, where there's no going back once the Kohen divorces her, so we want to make sure that there's no Pesach to this neder, so we let it go for 2 months before we force the Kohen to divorce her. Now, Rashi over here says, wait a second, if she's not allowed to get hanah from him, so he could appoint a third party to give her food, but what about hanah's tashmish? Isn't that also including the neder? No, you can't appoint a third party to do that. So what do we do about that? So Rashi writes, "Ein anas tashmisho ne'asar aleha." That was never included in the neder, but da meshubadah, because he's meshubad to give her that hanas tashmish. So he didn't have the ability, he didn't have the right to take a neder on the hanas tashmish. Hilchach b'shvil tashmish ein lanu l'chofa l'holti v'litin ksuba. So we never would have forced him to divorce her because of the fact that he asked her tashmish, because we could ignore that part of the neder. It's as if that neder was never taken, since he doesn't have the ability to take such a neder. He's not authorized to take such a neder. Vanos mizonos, aye, but how's he authorized to take a neder of another? She's not allowed to get mizonos from him. So the Gemara parach v'meshubadah. That's the Gemara's kasha. The Gemara's gonna have four answers to that kasha. But that's that in a chinami Rashi says that's a problem, and the Gemara's gonna deal with that problem. So says Tosel, sounds from Rashi that the lashon of hamadir sishto milehanoslo would include tashmi. That when he says she's not going to get any hanah, it means not just mizonos, it means tashmish as well. It's just that he's not authorized for it to take effect with regard to tashmish, and for some reason he's authorized for it to take effect with regard to the mizonos. But Tosfos says he has difficulty with this, because when the Gemara asks hamishubala, how is he allowed to take such a neder? Why is the Gemara asking hamishubala, and how could he be madir? And the Gemara asks from Konim Shanios Alficha, from other sources, migufa de masnis navamatzi lemifrach. It should have asked from the Mishnah Mineu Bay. It should have said that he has no ability to aser tashmish because he's mishubater, and if she would have become us, it would be Yotzi v'yitin ksuba, according to Beis Shammai after Shtei Shabbos, according to Beis Hillel after Shabbos Achas. The Gemara isn't even goris the whole issue of Tashmish. If Tashmish were included in the Lashon of the Neder, the Gemara should have made an issue out of it, should have at least discussed it. So Tosfos therefore disagrees with Rashi. And Tosfos says, Mefarsh Rabbeinu Tam, at the end of Tosfos, Dilei hanos lo, lo mashma el hanos mezonos. When a guy takes a Neder, his wife should not be lehanos lo, should not be able to get a na, that only means that she should not get mizonos. Tashmish was never even entered his mind. The words lehanoslo don't mean tashmish. It's nice that Rabbeinu Tam says that, but he doesn't explain why. Why is hanas tashmish not called hana'a? So the Tosa Rush explains a little bit more detail. A lot of times Tosa Rush says the same exact thing Tosa says, but just a few more words of explanation. So Tosa Rush over here gives a few more words of explanation. That lehanoslo means that she's not allowed to get a hana'a that's exclusive to her, something that she would be nana from, but no one else would be nana at the same time. When you're talking about tashmish, he's also nana at the same time that she's nana. So that therefore, it's not included in the lashon. It's only included in the lashon things that while she's being nana, she's the only one that's being nana. The Achronim also ask on Rashi that Hanas Tashmish, he meant to include Rashi, held Hanas Tashmish, but it doesn't get included because he's not authorized to include it. So the Shara Melech in Hilchos Nedarim asked the Kasha that generally speaking we have a rule that a neder shehutar miktsasa hutar kulo, that if part of the neder becomes hutar, the whole neder goes away. So shouldn't we say that the whole neder falls away because neder shehutar miktsasa hutar kulo, the tashmish part of the neder never took effect, so the mizonos part of the neder should never take effect either? So he says that no, since me ikra din, the neder is chal on all the konamos because even though he has a shibud, it's just that we're mevatel the neder because the Rabbanan made the shibud that he has of Tashmish Torah so strong that the Rabbanan mevatel the neder, but on a daraisa level, the neder would have been chal, so therefore you don't say neder shutar miksaso hutra kulo, because this isn't a neder that was invalid on a daraisa level, it was a neder that was valid on a daraisa level. Or it could be that Afla says the neder shutar miksaso hutra kulo is only when there was some sort of taus in the neder. Guy takes the neder that whoever's standing here shouldn't get hanah from whatever, and he didn't realize his father was one of the people standing there. That's the classic example of neder shutar miksaso, there was a mistake. But over here there was no mistake, he knew exactly what he was saying, and he knew exactly who he was taking the neder against. So you don't say neder shutar miksaso hutra kulo when there was no mistake involved. Vaitu in the Mishnah, hamadir sishto shlo titom echon mikol haperos yotzi vitin ksuba. If a guy takes a neder that his wife should not eat a particular type of fruit, he has to divorce her and pay her ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda Amar b'Yisrael yom echon yikayim shnayim yotzi vitin ksuba. And again, Rabbi Yehuda says we distinguish between Yisrael and a Kohen. For Yisrael, for one day they stay married, by the second day already he has to divorce her, give her ksuba. Ubekohen shnayim yikayim shloshi yotzi vitin ksuba. 2 days they stay married, third day he already has to divorce her and give her ksuba. Hamadir sishol shol tiskashet bechon mikol min yotzi vitin ksuba. If a guy takes a net that his wife shouldn't be able to enjoy one of the perfumes or one of the beauty products, so he has to divorce her and give her ksuba. Rabbios yomer ba'anios shalonos and kitzva u'ba'ashiru shloshim yom. It depends who the girl is. If he took the neder, if the girl is an ani, so the neder is only going to be a neder that's marriage ending if he took the neder forever, that she should never be able to use that type of tachshit. But if she's an ashir, then it's only if the neder is for 30 days or more. But if the neder is for less than 30 days, then it doesn't end the marriage. But anything more than 30 days would end the marriage. By an ani, he could have taken the neder for 6 years, and it's fine. The neder would still be chal, and they don't have to get divorced because he gave some kitzvah, he gave some end to it, as long as he gives some sort of reasonable end time. If he says 1,000 years, that's not giving an end to it, but he gives some sort of reasonable end time, so that would be that would save the marriage. He would still be allowed to stay with her. Now, when we say yotzi over here, he has to divorce her. Does that mean we beat him up till he divorces her? So that's machlokes rishonim. Tosos over here in Dibra Maskel Yotzi quotes machlokes rishonim about this, whether we're kofnos or lahotzi. The Ri's opinion is that whenever it says yotzi in the Mishnayos, it always means that kofnos or lahotzi. But Rabbeinu Chananel quotes from Yerushalmi that whenever it says yotzi, it doesn't mean kofin. It means that we tell him that you're chayiv to divorce her, you're obligated to divorce her. If you don't, we're going to call you an avaryan, we're going to call you all sorts of names, but it doesn't mean that we actually beat him up to make him divorce her. So that's a machlokas rishonim tells us to discuss over here. The other issue that's dealt with over here, that Achronim talk about, is yotzi v'yitin ksuba. So what happened? He took a neder, she's not allowed to get any hana from him. You can't live like that, you can't have such a neder, so divorce her and then pay her whatever, however many thousands of dollars the ksuba is worth. Well, isn't she then getting hana from him? Is he, when he's giving her the ksuba? So the Afla suggests that that the neder is understood to be kolzman, that they're married. That the neder is understood as only a binding neder, kolzman, that they're married. He never had in mind that the neder was going to continue after they were divorced. And the Avnei Miluim suggests that ksuba is different because it's not nitna l'mechila, and that for sure the konamos are not mafkim midei shibud. That's a pre-existing shibud. His neder definitely has no power over the ksuba. His neder may have power over the mizonos and over other shibudim that he has, but certainly not over the ksuba. The ksuba is going to trump any neder that he may have taken. So, frak the gemara of the kasha. V'kivin de meshubuda heichi matzi madila kol kminei de mafkala de shibudei. How can a guy ever take a neder that his wife is not allowed to get hana, is not allowed to get mizonos from him? He's meshubah to support her. So that's the major kasha. V'atzan. After all, doesn't the Mishnah say konim sheni osa lepicha eino tzarich lafer? That if a woman takes a neder that her maisi yadayim should not go to the husband, that he's not allowed to benefit from maisi yadayim, the husband doesn't even have to be goris the neder, he doesn't have to be made for the neder. Why? Alma kivin de meshabdalei lav kol kiminot de mafkalei l'shibudei. Since she's meshubah to provide him with her maisi yadayim, so she has no right to take any such neder, and the neder is not binding at all. So achanami kivin de So over here as well, the husband is meshubah to support his wife. So any neder he takes it, he's not going to support his wife, means absolutely nothing. So why are we taking this neder seriously in our Mishnah? So the Gemara is going to have four approaches. Number one, since the husband does have the right to say, you know what, you keep your ma'aseh yadayim, and I'm not going to provide mezonos anymore, I'm going to keep the mezonos, we treat it as if he actually said that he actually made that deal with her, that he's not going to provide her mezonos anymore, and she gets to keep her ma'aseh yadayim. But if you hold like Rav Huna Merav, that a woman has the ability and the right to say to her husband, you know what? Don't give me mezonos, and I'm going to keep my ma'aseh yadayim. I have a better paying job than any mezonos you're going to give me anyway. So let me keep my ma'aseh yadayim. You keep your mezonos. If she's authorized to say that, then why, when she takes a neder that the husband can't have her ma'aseh yadayim, do we ignore that neder entirely? Why don't we say that we treat it as if she had just said that I'm not interested in your mezonos and I'm not going to give you my ma'aseh yadayim, and then we have to take her seriously? Why do we assume that when she takes a neder that you can't get enough from my ma'aseh yadayim, that we could ignore that neder? It means nothing. We don't have to take it seriously. If you're going to say this word of nasekeh, that anytime someone has the ability to say something, we treat it as if they said it, so why don't we treat that case as if she said, I don't want your mezonos, and I don't want you to have my ma'aseh yadayim? So it must be that we don't say this thing called na'asa. We don't say it says if they said. If they didn't say what they were supposed to say, we don't say it's as if anything. Ella, answer number two. Why is it that the husband has the right to take a neder that she's not going to be able to get the mezonos? But it's not as if he said anything. He did say. He said, you keep your ma'aseh yadayim, I'm going to keep the mezonos. And that was the arrangement that they had. So therefore, he didn't owe her any mezonos, so he had the right to take a neder that she shouldn't get the mezonos. But then why does the Mishnah say you have to appoint someone else, a third party, to provide for her? He had no obligation to provide for her. The deal was that he doesn't have to provide for her anymore. So b'dilo safka, maybe your ma'aseh yadayim weren't enough to provide her with what her basic sustenance, her basic needs were, and that's why he needed the third party. Well, if her ma'aseh yadayim weren't sufficient, well then he's still meshubah to her. So then we're back to the original question. He's meshubah to support her with what she basically needs. So how's his neder chal? So the whole thing doesn't make sense again. We're back to where we started with, that he's not able to take a neder on something that he's meshubah to her. So Amar Rav Ashi b'maspekas l'dvarim gedolim v'enim aspekas. Now, she does have enough with her ma'aseh yadayim to provide the major needs. It's just the smaller things that she doesn't have enough. What are these smaller things exactly? I mean, you can't just give some sort of vague answer that doesn't mean anything. What are the smaller things? Either regilabhu, harigilabhu. If these are things that she's grown accustomed to, so then it's something that the husband is meshubah to provide her with, and we're right back to the question that his neder should be absolutely meaningless. V'lo regilabhu, and if these are things that she's not accustomed to, well then parnis lamala. Then he's not obligated at all to provide them for her, and he shouldn't have to appoint a third party to provide her with these things. If these are things that are beyond their means. So says Gemara, lo tzricha, the regila bebeis nasha, the kamagagla ba'day. Before she got married in her father's house, she always had these things. These were extra things that she always had by her father's house. Once she got married, her husband couldn't afford these things, and she was willing to live at a lower level with her husband. But to Amr Leh, she could say to her husband, I'm willing to tolerate a lower standard of living before you started taking the darim that I shouldn't get any anah from you. What's this business that I'm not going to get any anah from you? But now that you're taking the darim, I demand that I should live at my father's standards of living. I shouldn't have to deal with this lower standard of living. That she was never meaning that I was mochel when we got married, but the mechila was only with the understanding that we were going to have a loving marriage. You're taking these nedarim, and that mechila no longer applies. As Tosus points out, v'adayta d'achilo machla she'adirena hilkach meshubada. So therefore, it goes back to him being meshubad to providing her with these things. But the neder is still chal, because at the time of the neder, he wasn't meshubad. At the time of the neder, she was willing to live with that lower standard. So he wasn't meshubad in these things at the time of the neder. So here's how you walk that delicate, balance. You manage that delicate balance of, on the one hand, he's not meshubad enough so that the neder could be chal, but he's meshubad enough that he still has to support her through that third party. It's something that at the time of the neder, he wasn't meshubad to do, but now that the neder was made, he becomes meshubad because she's no longer mochel. Inamitos says below ta mechila neder chal. Even without mechila, the neder would be chal. She calls man she imo yeshal legalgal imo, because so long as she's with him, she's supposed to live by his standards. Even though the general rule is that ola imo veino yeredes imo, that she gets elevated in terms of her style of living, but she doesn't go down with him. But that's only if her whole family was on a certain level. But if her father was just a wealthy guy, and he was unusually wealthy amongst his own family, and provided with certain things, so then she's yeredes back to the husband's level, so generally speaking. So you don't even need the time of mechila in order to say that the neder would be chal. So affecting mar though, maishna adam yom, why only 30 days then? So adam yom, lo shami ba'inshi, velozila ba'milsa. For the first 30 days, no one's going to hear about this arrangement, so it's not going to be embarrassing. Tfei shami ba'inshi v'zila ba'milsa. More than that, people are going to start hearing about it. It's going to be very embarrassing. Third answer, iba yisemashi yidirik shi arusa. Maybe the neder was chal because he took the neder while she was still in arusa. Arusa mi'isla mezone? What do you mean? Arusa is not entitled to mezonos. She giyas man v'lonisu. Now, already came the time where they were supposed to get married, and they hadn't yet gotten married. Ditzani, giyas man v'lonisu, achos mishlo, v'achos pachuma. The halacha is, when the time where they were supposed to have nisun arrives, he has to already start supporting her. So, maishna ashtol shimirem, why only until 30 days does he appoint a parnes? We assume that a person is willing to be a shliach to support this woman for 30 days, but more than that, he's not going to be interested in doing the shlichus anymore. He's not going to take his job seriously. V'ibayisema, fourth answer, how the husband could take a neder on saying that he's meshubat to his wife, she'dirik she'arusa v'niseis, that he took the neder while she was still in arusa, and then they got married. Niseis ha'safra v'kibla, but wait, once they got married, she was already in agreement with whatever the arrangement was. No, because she could claim, I got married because I thought I'd be able to deal with it. But now I realize I can't deal with such a thing that I'm not allowed to get any anah from him. A woman could have such a taina if he has some sort of blemish, some sort of mum, that she could say, I thought I'd be able to tolerate it, but it grosses me out, or whatever, I can't tolerate it. But can you really say that about mezonos? I thought I'd be able to live without food. You did? Why would you think you'd be able to live without food? So can you really say such a thing by mezonos? So you got to stick with one of our first three answers. The fourth answer doesn't work out. So for the first 30 days, we appoint a third party to support her. What does that accomplish? Isn't the parnes just the shliach of the husband? So isn't she weiter getting hana from the husband just through a shliach now? Now he didn't actually appoint the guy as a shliach. He just made an announcement. Anyone who supports my wife isn't going to lose any money from it. Like, hint, hint, if you support my wife, I'll pay you back later, but I'm not actually making you a shliach to do so. Is that not a shlichus? Vatanan, doesn't the Mishnah say Misha Yamushlach Bibar, if a guy is in a bar, Vamar Kala Shamea Kala Yichtov Get Lishto, Harelu Yichtov Vietnu, and he just says, anyone who hears me could write a get for my wife. So they're allowed to write a get even though we never appointed anyone as a shliach. That counts as a shlichus. So says Mar Hachyasha, that's a different case. You can't compare the two. Hasam Kamar Yichtov, the guy stuck in the bar said the word, write the get for my wife. He just never appointed a specific person to do it, but he said, you should write. But Hacham Kamar Yazun, over here did he say you should support? Kol Azan Kamar, he said anyone who does support won't lose. When there's a fire that breaks out in Shabbos, didn't we say you're allowed to say anyone who saves stuff from the fire is not going to lose out if they save something from the fire? You're not allowed to pay people to do it, but it's not going to lose if you save something from the fire. So doesn't that sound like it's only by a fire? But in this kind of case, it's considered to be a shlichus. In our case, where he says kol hazon eino mafsid, that would be considered a shlichus. Says Gemara, no, that's not what the fire case is coming to exclude. Lo lemutei sharisum de Shabbos. You're not allowed to ask anyone to do anything else on Shabbos for you, but except for the fire, except if there's a fire. But in a chinami, it's not considered a shlichus in our case either. Masav Rabba, mudra ana mechaver vein lamayochal. If someone has nedra ana, he's not allowed to get enough from his friend. They don't have what to eat. Yelichel etzel chen v'ni aragila. So he can go to a storekeeper that he knows well, that he goes to all the time. V'yomelo, and he can say, ish ploni mudra ana mimeni. This guy is not allowed to get ana from me. Vein yoda ma'eselo. I don't know what to do with him because he's nebuch. He needs, and I want to provide him. Who knows in the vav no tel mizeh? So the chen v'ni can supply that guy with whatever he needs, and then the chen v'ni could come and get paid from the man who had the neder ana. That arrangement is permissible, but to just say kol hazan einu mafsid apparently is not permissible because that's shlichus. Says Mar, no, it's not. Certainly, if he says kol hazan einu mafsid, that would work. That would be fine. That would be totally okay. Aval even the regulus of the kazal karmelay commando amrle zil havle atami. But I would have thought when you go to the chenvani, since you know him and you have a relationship with him, then it's really a lot more like you're making him a shliach. So it's telling me a greater chiddush that even in the case of the chenvani, that's going to be mutter as well. So Be'ez Hashem will begin from Gufo, going back to the mission in Darim, discussing what to do when you have a neder ana against somebody and you want to support them tomorrow.